The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Coral W. Peach presiding. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Good afternoon. This is Judge Peach, and I'm joined by Judge Greenberg and Judge Toth. We are convened today via teleconference to consider arguments in the matter of Peter Van Der Mark versus Robert L. Wilkie, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, case number 19-2795. Will counsel, beginning with appellant's counsel, please make your appearance for our record?
Good morning, Judge Luke Miller.
Thank you.
James Drysdale for the secretary.
Thank you. And Mr. Miller, would you care to reserve time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 10 minutes, please.
Thank you very much. If counsel are ready, please, we'll begin with appellant's counsel. Mr. Miller, please proceed.
Good afternoon, Presiding Judge Peach, Judge Greenberg, and Judge Toth. May it please the court. Appellant is a 75-year-old veteran of the United States Navy. In May 2016 and May 2018, the veteran received medical care from a non-department facility in Thailand for the treatment of an abdominal aorta aneurysm, and he received cardiac care services to include bypass surgery. He filed requests for reimbursement with the VA through the Chief Business Office Purchased Care. VA denied his claims. On April 17, 2019, the Board of Veterans Appeals upheld the VA's denials of reimbursement. Appellant has consistently maintained the position that the May 2016 and May 2018 medical care rendered in Thailand were both emergency medical care, whereby he is entitled to reimbursement pursuant to 38 U.S.C. 1725 or 1728. VA and the board denied appellant's claims, reasoning that 1725...
This Judge Toth, sorry to slow you down here, but so is there any difference, practically speaking, between 1725 and 1728?
Your Honor, the practical difference is there's different eligibility criteria. Under 1728, there's four criteria.
Sure.
And there's four criteria as well as 1725. You have to be an active VA healthcare participant and then essentially have to pay for that care. And so the eligibility criteria is different. Your Honor. And then also under 1725, a veteran is not eligible pursuant to 1725 if they are separately eligible under 1728.
Okay. So basically, maybe we can refine this. For the purposes of this appeal, is there any meaningful difference between the two? Does anything in the facts here trigger anything in the difference, or should we just treat these as more or less overlapping kind of for our purposes here?
Sure, Your Honor. And if I'm understanding your question, I don't believe that for practical purposes there's any difference other than under 1728, I think showing eligibility is a little bit more simplistic as it requires the medical condition have been rendered for as to an emergent nature. And then as far as the eligibility, the veteran has a permanent and total rating for individual unemployability. So he meets the eligibility criteria under 1728, and we don't turn to whether 1725, he is an active VA healthcare participant because he engages in the foreign medical program. So it's just a little bit more simplistic analysis, but the end result is the same, Your Honor.
Okay, good. Thanks. That's helpful.
When we turn to the board's decision at page 5 and 6, the board denied appellant's claim, finding that 38 U.S.C. 1724 and its implementing regulation 38 CFR 17.35 were the appropriate statute and regulation in the case. The board went on to acknowledge that the VA is authorized to reimburse veterans for emergency medical treatment under both 38 U.S.C. 1725 and 28. However, the board found those statutes not applicable to services performed outside of the United States. Now, turning to the secretary's brief at page 15, they also continued with this argument and this support for the board's position. The secretary says that 1724 subsection A imposes an absolute bar to the department furnishing hospital care, medical services, and nursing home care abroad because it states that secretary shall not furnish hospital or domiciliary care or medical services outside any state, subject to the exceptions set forth in 1724 subsection B and C. The question presented to this court is whether 38 U.S.C. 1725 and 28 compel reimbursement for emergency medical care rendered in a non-department facility in a foreign location, or whether 38 U.S.C. 1724 precludes reimbursement. I'd like to briefly address three areas. The plain meaning of 1725, 28, as well as 1724 compel reimbursement regardless of the non-VA facility's location. The VA's interpretation of furnished to include reimbursement and emergency medical treatment is erroneous. The appellant meets the eligibility as laid out in 1728, as well as he meets the eligibility criteria as laid out in 1725. Turning to the plain meaning of the three statutes in question, when construing a statute, we start with the plain meaning, which requires an examination of the specific language at issue and the overall structure of the statute. The plain meaning then is to be given effect unless a literal application produces an absurd result. When we look at the language of 1724 subsection A, it states, except as provided in subsections B and C, the secretary shall not furnish hospital or domiciliary care or medical services outside any state, with some limited exceptions, those exceptions being Canada, the Republic of the Philippines. Or if the veteran has the cares related to a service-connected disability or for vocational rehabilitation. Whereas when you turn to 1725 and 28, they both compel reimbursement for hospital care or medical services that are related to emergency treatment that are furnished in a non-department facility. The language itself is clear. 1724 is focused on the furnishing of medical care or services, whereas 25 and 28 create a reimbursement authority to the secretary.
Now, I mean, Mr. Miller, sorry to slow you down again, but I understand your argument as to mean that the word furnish means only the sort of direct provision by VA of medical services. Or, I mean, can you read that term as also meaning VA's sort of contracting with third parties to provide health care?
So, Your Honor, our position is the word furnish means to directly, you know, to provide or that point of care or the VA contracting with an entity, a non-department entity, to provide that point of care. And the reason for this is if you look at how furnish is utilized, and if you look at 1724, 25, and 28, just within the specific statutes, the word furnish is a separate action than reimburse. Now, furnish is not defined within any of these three statutes. It's also not defined in Chapter 17. But the plain language or a common usage of furnish is to provide or provide with what is needed, which was cited to in the appellant's brief from Webster's Dictionary. And we think that that applies not only when you look at the specific statutes in question, but also when you look broadly in the context of the statutory scheme as a whole. Because under Chapter 17, as you'll see in that's contained in the appellee's brief at pages 18 and 19, they list multiple statutes where furnish is utilized, and it always carries the same meaning of either the department, so the VA directly furnishing this medical care or service, or the VA contracting with non-department facilities to provide that point of care. It's furnish is never utilized to encompass reimbursement. It's a completely separate function, whereas reimbursement is after the fact, after that direct care or service is rendered, whereas furnish means to provide that care or provide that point of care. It's never either specifically in the three statutes or broadly in the statutory scheme. Furnish has never been interpreted to encompass reimbursement.
Go ahead, Judge Greenberg.
My question is, assume hypothetically for the moment that 25 and 28 are applicable, that the Vandermark qualifies under those statutes. Didn't the board make its determination based on 1724, and shouldn't we be focused on that and that alone? And to that extent, my question is, what gives the secretary the authority to limit congressional language with its regulation in terms of geography? And secondly, I adopt the question of furnish, the definition of furnish to mean provide the service, as opposed to the clear meaning, in my view, of the other two statutes, to reimburse for. So why don't we concentrate on 1724, since that's what the board did?
Well, Your Honor, to the point of 1724 and focusing on that alone, I think part of the reason for that is one of when we're engaging in statutory construction, we look at whether there's surplusage that's created or the rule against surplusage, whereas words are added that are not in existence in the statute. And so if we look at 1724 and we apply the secretary's position or even the board's rationale, 1725 and 28 no longer serve a purpose, because if 1724 authorizes the VA to reimburse within the states or outside the states in only limited situations, then in 1973, when the Veterans Health Care Expansion Act of 1973 and then in 1999 through the Veterans Millennium Health Care and Benefits Act of 1999, when they were created then, essentially Congress was legislating for no reason. And so we have to look outside of 1724. We also look at the other statutes because they help this court determine what furnish actually means when we look at how it's applied potentially in competing statutes or the statutory scheme as a whole. As far as the agency limiting congressional language, that's a principle as well of statutory construction, which is, you know, Congress doesn't legislate for no reason. The Supreme Court said in Simmons v. Himmelrich that absent persuasive indications to the contrary, we presume Congress says what it means and means what it says. And here under 1725 and 28, Congress is clearly saying, VA, Secretary, you shall reimburse an eligible veteran.
Right.
To the point.
Sorry to interrupt. That's my point exactly. I read 1724 as reflecting a congressional intent that it didn't want the secretary to be building facilities around the world, as opposed to the clear intent of 1725 and 28, that when a veteran finds themselves in the position of Vandermark, they're to be reimbursed. Do you agree with that?
Your Honor, we agree with that as far as 1724, the congressional intent was to put the onus as to when the secretary must or may, provide this medical care either directly or through contract with third parties and non-department facilities. So it was not in contemplation of reimbursement as came about later in 1725 and 28, which Congress was aware of 1724 when it drafted and then enacted 1725 and 28. And we presume Congress is aware of statutes when it legislates. And my understanding was, Your Honor, that you know your definition of furnish is to provide, and we would agree that is ultimately furnishes is what furnish does mean, to provide. And we think as part of provide, though, there's a very clear distinction between providing that direct care or medical care or that reimbursement, that after the fact function, which provide, as the word furnish is used in 1724, alludes to furnish meaning providing that direct care. Reimbursement would be an after the fact function. Likewise, that continues to play out in both 1725 and 28 as that point of care or contracted point of care, with then that reimbursement after the fact. And I was going to say, and if you look at 1725 and 28, Congress clearly drew a distinction between reimbursement and furnish, because they use not only reimbursement and furnish in one of the same sentences, but furnishes and reimburse are used in both statutes, as well as furnish is used right next to emergency treatment. And so furnish can't encompass reimbursement, as it would defy not only the English language, but it defies how furnish and reimbursement are used in the broader context of under Chapter 17.
So that, simply put, the Secretary was wrong to consider this case under 1724, period.
That is our position, Your Honor.
Yeah. They should have reimbursed under 1725 or 28.
Yes, Your Honor, and we believe that, you know, we can understand potentially why the board did that. We believe that it's clearly erroneous. But if you were to evaluate a claim for reimbursement under 1725 and 28, it clearly requires reimbursement regardless of the geographic location of the non-department facility. They both require a veteran be eligible, which it has to be an emergency type situation, and they have to separately meet the criteria, either service-connected condition, secondary, permanent and total rating, or part of vocational rehabilitation, or under 1725, it has to be, again, emergent, and then they have to be an active VA healthcare participant, as well as having received care in the 24 months preceding the emergent situation, and then they have to be liable for that debt. And so if the board were to evaluate Mr. Vandermark under just 1725 and 28, we think it's clear he would have been found eligible under 1728, and the board wouldn't have gotten to the 1725 analysis. But if they had and determined him not eligible under 28, he'd be eligible under 25. And the issue of whether 1724 precludes reimbursement, just it never would have been addressed, because it did not need to be. And so,
thank you.
With the only, yes,
go ahead.
And the only,
continue.
When we look at the three statutes, Congress created this reimbursement function through 1725 and 28. They were presumed aware of 1724 when drafting both 25 and 28, and they chose not to use reimbursement and furnish in the same statutes, but in the same sentences, like in 1725 subsection A1. They were aware of a distinction between reimburse and furnish.
This is Judge Peach. I'd like to follow up question on Judge Greenberg's line of questioning. Mr. Vandermark submitted his claim under the rubric that it was an emergency situation, that it was an emergency care. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Yes, and let's assume just for this question that it was not an emergency at all. Would 1724 kick in then?
Your Honor, I think that's a great question, and our position is no. 1724 is not controlling when the medical – the reason that medical services are rendered is due to an emergency. Because, again, when we look at 1725 and 28, Congress saw a distinction between providing medical services and then of an emergent nature. And so when 1728 was created in 1973, it was to address, kind of this gap. And if you look at the legislative history of the Veterans Healthcare Expansion Act, it actually supports this. They realized there was this group of veterans that had emergency type situations that weren't being reimbursed. And then if we also look at in 2008, the may reimburse in 1725 and 28 was changed to shall. Congress said, hey, Secretary, you shall reimburse. And the legislative history behind that shows that you had these entities and facilities providing that emergency medical care that were not being reimbursed, in part because when the veteran was safe to be transferred to a VA facility, the VA was not accepting transfer. So Congress said, we will ensure there's reimbursement for these veterans. And I see that I'm out of time.
Please go ahead and continue the answer. I'm interested.
Thank you, Your Honor. And so they modified this language in 2008 because these entities were not being reimbursed because the VA was not accepting transfer, was unable to. And so these third parties were being denied payment, and Congress stepped in and said, okay, this is no longer a discretionary function, and this is supported by both the House bill and the Senate bill. They said, Secretary, you shall reimburse these parties for that continued care until transfer is accepted, or if you choose to accept it or not accept it.
But that's based on – yes, I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's based on a finding that the care was of an emergent nature? And did the board find that in this case?
Your Honor, as far as looking at the 2008 change, yes, it was based on the emergent nature of the situation, and then essentially when you have had the veterans stabilized at that point, and that's built into both 1725 and 28, that you can then safely transfer to a department facility, and that just wasn't happening. And then when we look at the board did not make a determination of whether Mr. Vandermark's medical situation in May 2016 and May 2018, they did not get to the issue of whether it was an emergency situation or not.
Thank you.
And we believe this. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mr. Drysdale?
May it please the court. Appellant's position has long been that the absence of a geographic limitation in Section 1725 and 1728 requires VA to pay for emergency care abroad for non-service-connected conditions. However, as the Supreme Court has explained, courts may not presume extraterritorial application of a statute. Instead, statutes are presumed not to apply abroad. And it's appellant's burden to rebut that presumption with a clear expression of Congress's intent for a statute to apply abroad. He attempts to rebut that presumption and maneuver.
This Judge Toth, I mean, doesn't the whole extraterritorial doctrine, I mean, isn't that for punitive statutes, either sort of criminal statutes or statutes where people will be held liable? It's not as much, I mean, VA operates around the world, you know, I mean, they have facilities, obviously, in the Philippines. It strikes me that, I mean, is extraterritoriality the best sort of way to approach this question?
Well, in interpreting the statute, it can't be said that Congress's silence indicates its intent for the application abroad. Typically, it's construed the opposite, that it does not apply. And the appellant's argument has been that because Congress didn't put a specific limitation in 1725 or 1728 that it must be presumed to apply abroad. But general canon of statutory construction says otherwise.
Well, this is Judge Greenberg. What statutory construction canon says that? This is, before you answer, this is a favored group, a specific favored group of litigant, veterans, favored by Congress since the beginning of the Republic. Why would we not assume that if Congress meant to limit the territoriality of the reach of its statute, 1725 and 28, it would have said so, rather than the other way around?
Well, the Supreme Court has said so. In the application of these types of extraterritorial application. And
with regard
to
veterans?
Working on a blank slate. Well, we're not working on a blank slate here because 1724, Congress has expressly said that VA shall not furnish care outside a state. So when you look at the 1724, 1725, and 1728 together, VA, Congress has spoken and put specific limitations on VA and its ability to provide care abroad. Now, appellant, from what I understand, if I understood his answers correctly, said that furnish could be read to include VA providing care indirectly to via third-party providers via contract. But there's no difference between VA providing care directly or indirectly through a contract provider and providing that care indirectly to a veteran as a pass-through for payment to a third-party provider via reimbursement. I see no way to draw that line between providing contract care through a third party or paying a third party to provide that care via reimbursement. When the statutory scheme is read as a whole and in context, it clearly shows that VA is prohibited from furnishing care outside a state, either directly or indirectly. And looking at Chapter 17 as a whole, there are many examples where Congress has specifically authorized VA to contract with non-department providers to, quote, furnish services. 1703 is a broad example of that. Congress specifically says that VA can contract with non-department providers to furnish services.
Well,
so
let me ask you
VA
this.
Pays the
Counsel, let me ask you this, kind of along those lines, which is, the 1724B1, you know, has a pretty large exception, which is VA could presumably furnish health care abroad for people with veterans with service-connected conditions, right? And what I want to ask is, I mean, does VA under the FMP, I mean, insofar as you know, would they reimburse veterans who for service-connected conditions?
I believe so, yes, Your Honor. Under 17.35C, I believe it sets up the regulatory procedures for those types of reimbursements for service-connected conditions.
Right. So VA would read that exception as allowing them to not only, say, directly provide, if they have a facility, or contract with a third party or reimburse, you know, to the limits of that exception.
That's right. Yes, Your Honor, because the exception, if Congress has said you can do this for service-connected disabilities, you cannot do this for non-service-connected disabilities. So furnish can mean directly via contract or reimbursement if you're talking about a service-connected disability because of 1724B1.
Okay. And, I mean, I have some questions about the kind of historical or just the way the FMP operates. Am I correct in understanding? So VA has a facility in the Philippines, or do they sort of just contract with like a DOD or a private hospital? Do you know how this works? generally?
Right. Historically, it has been contracting with the hospital in Manila as set out in 1724C. And in my research on this, I believe VA also currently operates an outpatient clinic in Manila on the grounds of the U.S. Embassy that a veteran in that location can also go to. But those are specific exceptions that are set out in 1724 to authorize VA to do that. But otherwise, it's strictly prohibited.
Okay, thank you.
So the appellant hasn't shown that Congress intended to allow this type of reimbursement, or that reimbursement should be, that furnished should be construed so narrowly and read in isolation, that 1724, 1725, 1728 should be read independently instead of as a whole, as part of the broader statutory scheme. We know that 1724 was in place when Congress enacted 1725 and 1728, and that Congress is presumed to legislate against the backdrop of existing law. But Congress did not change 1724 at that time of it, when it enacted 1725 or 1728. So it shows that Congress understood this prohibition that had been in place at least since the 1950s, as shown in the Senate report when the exceptions to 1724 were put in place, that veterans living abroad do not receive care at VA expense. That was acknowledged by the Senate when 1728 was enacted. It was acknowledged by the VA administrator at that time. And that, you know, that context also shows that it wasn't a question about can VA directly provide medical care and perform procedures in a foreign country. It says veterans living abroad do not receive care at VA expense. So that's more closely aligned to the question we have before us. That would be a reimbursement or a, that type of question. It would speak more closely to that. And the history of this shows that that was what was understood at the time. And after subsequent changes, that, you know, 1724 was not updated. The language was not changed. And we have to assume that Congress knew what was what 1724 meant and how it was understood, and enacting the later provisions.
Counsel, this is Judge Peach. On 1724, Mr. Vandermark was flown to Hawaii for care for his heart. Was that at VA expense?
Yes, Your Honor. VA coordinated his care and his transfer to a federal facility that was able to schedule and was prepared to perform the exact procedure for which he now claims he reimbursement as an emergency basis. So the veteran was.
Would VA use 1724 to do that? He was overseas, but they furnished him medical service by flying him to Hawaii. And what was the authorization for that?
Because he went to a federal facility. He was transferred first to Guam and then to Hawaii.
Would that be an interpretation of how the veteran VA would provide medical services to somebody abroad?
Well, if someone were, right, if he, being in Guam, being in Hawaii, he could not, that is within a state for purposes of 1724, is the way state is defined. So once he was there, then VA could provide those services. So, yes, VA can coordinate an attempt to help a veteran get to a facility, get to a federal facility or a VA facility, a department facility where the treatment can be provided. And that was done under 1728 because he is he does have a total disability rating for a permanent total disability condition, even though his heart condition was not service-connected. So if he were in the United States or in a state as defined in the statutes, then VA can provide care for that condition.
Thank you.
Mr. Drysdale, I want to ask you sort of the same or a variant of the same question I asked opposing counsel, which is, so basically, is there anything relevant or is any purported distinction between 1725 and 1728 relevant, or can we kind of treat them as the same for all intents and purposes? I mean, I understand there are technical differences, but are any of those differences relevant to kind of your argument?
No, Your Honor, not in the, based on the facts of this case.
Okay, good. Thanks.
So, you know, just to touch on one other point about the veterans' emergency care, we've already discussed his treatment in 2018. He was in a federal facility where the procedure was scheduled. He elected to leave and return to receive private treatment. You know, the Secretary's position is that under any circumstance that cannot be considered emergency treatment within the definition of emergency under 1725F1B. And in addition, I would point out that in the 2016 treatment, the veteran first contacted VA and then to state that his condition was that he was scheduled for surgery to be performed at a later date. And then over 2 weeks later, he then had that surgery after VA had specifically told him that it would not be able to reimburse him for that. So neither condition in the 16 or 17 days between for the 2016 condition after he contacted VA until the procedure was performed and for the 2018 treatment there were, you know, he was in a federal facility and from the time he first contacted VA until the procedure was performed was 26 days or so. Neither of those really show an immediate that an immediate delay would cause would be hazardous as to qualify as an emergency treatment. And I think the definition in 17.130 also supports that in saying that there would be no reimbursement possible for treatment procured from a private source in preference to an available government facility or source. So under the facts or under as a matter of law, neither of these, the procedures, the treatment for which appellant seeks reimbursement should be found to constitute emergency treatment for purposes of this case, even if the court were to decide that that such reimbursement might be possible, which the Secretary argues against. So you know, I would just reiterate that the Secretary's view is that the plain language of the statutes, read as a whole and in context, is contrary to appellant's argument and shows that VA is not able to furnish care outside of the state. and that VA is not limiting Congress's language in its regulation, but it's simply stating and giving effect to the requirements of 1724, as well as the requirements of 1725 and 1728. If there are no further questions, the Secretary asks the Court to affirm the Board's decision.
Any other questions, Judge Greenberg?
No.
Judge Toth?
No, I'm good, thanks.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Counsel. Mr. Miller?
Yes, Your Honor.
I think you had 10 minutes. Did you reserve for rebuttal?
Yes. Thank you, Presiding Judge Peach. The Secretary's statement was that interpreting 1724 encompasses reimbursement. If you actually look at 1728, the Secretary's interpretation of 24 renders 1728 subsection A1 surplusage because 1728 subsection A1 premises as eligibility one part of the criteria as for if the emergency treatment is to treat a service-connected medical condition. There's a distinction between the service-connected medical condition in 28 and a service-connected medical condition in 24, and that's because it's the definition of furnish. And furnish is in 1724 for the department to provide or contract with a third party to provide, whereas 1728 and 25 are both focused on that reimbursement, that after the fact function. So when we analyze a statute, we're looking at not only the language and then how it's applied in the context of a statute. Then we look to see if it creates an absurd result, which is an exception to the plain meaning. And in this situation, the absurd result is actually created utilizing furnish to encompass reimbursement. If you apply our interpretation of furnish, 1724, 25, and 28 continue to operate independently. You have 24, which controls the ability of the VA to furnish or contract, for care, and then 25 and 28 are focused on, it grants that authority to the Secretary to reimburse. As a note, if you turn to the veteran reply brief at page 6, there's a citation to the record. It's an explanation of benefits at page 827. And while the veteran was residing in Thailand, the VA actually reimbursed him for medical care that was not of an emergent nature, and it was not related to a service-connected medical condition. The VA's own actions are they haven't taken a hard line as to how they treat reimbursement in a foreign location. I wanted to point out that the implementing regulation, 38 CFR 17.120, the 17.120 is the implementing regulation for 1728. And that regulation includes a geographic limitation. And when we look at kind of how the VA took this current position as to there's a geographic limitation based on both statute and regulation, we have to look at, historically how we got here. And 1728 was enacted in 1993. And the implementing regulation at the time was 38 CFR 17.80. There was no geographic limitation contained in the Secretary's implementing regulation. That the current language, and that CFR is now 17.120, that limiting language, that geographic restriction, was not incorporated until 1986, so 12 years later. Not only was Congress aware of 1724's language when it created 25 and 28, the Secretary was aware of the language in the statutes, as well as its own language contained in 38 CFR 17.80. There was no limitation on geographic restriction. It was not until 12 years later that they decided to include that language. When we look at the reimbursement criteria under 1725 and 28, they require there be an emergent situation. Under 1728, there must be an emergency treatment, and it has to be to treat a service-connected disability, non-service-connected disability, any disability if the veteran has a total disability permanent in nature, or treatment related to vocational rehab. Likewise, 1725 has eligibility criteria, which is the veteran has to receive emergency treatment, and the veteran has to be an active VA healthcare participant, receive VA healthcare within 24 months preceding, and the veteran must be personally liable. Unfortunately, the board did not make a determination as to whether it was emergent or not, but we think the record is clear. In May of 2016, on May 5th, 2016, Bangkok Hospital, they uncovered that that appellant has a 6.3 by 8.1 inch abdominal aorta aneurysm. And they determined that they don't have the medical supplies needed to complete the surgery. He's not safe to be transported. The doctor is also out of the country. They complete the surgery as soon as possible. On May 26th, Mr. Vandermark leaves the hospital. He submits a claim for reimbursement. I think the record is clear. Mr. Vandermark had a permanent and total rating at the time, and the situation itself was emergent. That the emergency is based on this reasonably prudent person standard, which is applicable to both 1725 and 28. And then if you look at the eligibility criteria for 25 and 20, excuse me, for 1725, if you look at then the May 2018 medical situation, Mr. Vandermark was experiencing, you know, cardiac issues. He did work with the Veterans Administration, and they did transport him then to Guam, and he was then transferred to Hawaii. Unfortunately, during a couple-week span in May 2018, Mr. Vandermark does not have the surgery completed in Hawaii, and he flies back to Thailand. He then has the surgery, the bypass surgery, completed in Thailand, submits the claim for reimbursement. So when we evaluate whether for purposes of eligibility under 1725 or 28, this isn't whether – it's not a medical determination of whether it was an emergent situation. It has to do with a reasonably prudent standard, and that's based on the veteran's perception as to what's occurring at the time. And the veteran – and I see that my time is up, Your Honors. We would just simply ask you to find that 1724's definition of furnish not include reimbursement. Thank you.
Thank you very much to both counsel. The case is now submitted.
The court is in recess.